This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham.
Okay, you can admit it. When you're making a purchase online, you're about to click the button that gives final approval to your order, and you notice you're not being charged any sales tax? Gives you a little thrill, doesn't it? Of course, we're all supposed to be responsible for paying that tax. State law says we should at least turn it in at the same time we file our income taxes, but very few people do. So state and local governments are losing millions in tax revenues because sales taxes are not getting collected from many online retailers. Do you care? Ever think about what that might mean for local schools or police forces? We'll think about it this hour, as well as the implications for so-called brick-and-mortar stores that do have to collect taxes, and even how all this could soon affect motorists and the tax on gasoline. Our analysis of the debate over online taxes, coming up right after the news.
Great to be with you. I'm Tom Graham, and this is Virginia Insight. Sales taxes. How do you feel about them? If physically you walk into a store and make a purchase, and then later buy that same item online, should you have to pay the same amount of sales tax? What, if anything, should be done about the fact that many online retailers do not collect any tax, in effect giving their products a discounted price compared to so-called brick-and-mortar stores? If you've got thoughts on this or a related question, we'd be happy to hear from you at 888-WMRA-TALK. In all numbers, that's 888-967-2825. Here in studio to help from James Madison University, political scientist and public policy specialist Bob Roberts, plus president of the Harrisonburg Rockingham Chamber of Commerce, Frank Tamburino, as well as active member of that chamber and CEO of the insurance firm known as the Rockingham Group, Mr. Neil Menefee. Gentlemen, thank you all for making time for us.
Oh, thanks for having us.
Glad to be here.
Tom, nice to be here.
Now, we should note that one of the key players in the online tax issue is Virginia Congressman Bob Goodlatte. As chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, it has largely been his doing that the issue has not gotten an official hearing in the U.S. House of Representatives yet. Congressman Goodlatte making it clear that he opposes the online tax bill that was approved by the U.S. Senate, calling that legislation deeply flawed. We did invite Congressman Goodlatte to be with us today, but through his press secretary, we were told that he is unavailable. That said, let's go first to a man who has been called on to testify before the House Judiciary Committee on other business issues in the past. Neil Menefee, what do you think it's important for people to know about this debate on sales taxes?
Well, Tom, it's a really interesting question, I think quite relevant to many changes we're seeing in our society as we move to a more online, interconnected world. The way we find products and evaluate them and then purchase them has changed pretty dramatically. That used to take place pretty much in a retail store completely a few years back. Today, many of us, in terms of doing our holiday shopping, probably go online to look at products and in many instances make a purchase. I guess the real question is, does our tax system really work effectively in today's world compared to how it was originally envisioned? I guess sales tax was mostly targeted to be a consumption tax collected at the point that product was purchased and delivered. And again, that used to be in a retail on-site environment. Today, with much of that happening in the electronic environment, sales taxes are not collected, particularly to the degree the retailer that you're buying from online doesn't have a presence in the state. So that raises a fundamental and interesting question about fairness. Is it fair to treat a retailer in a much different fashion and not collect a tax to the degree that they're doing it electronically located out of state as compared to a retailer located in the state, or in fact an electronic retailer that has some sort of tie or presence to the state? I think very differing opinions on that topic, but fundamentally, yeah, I think it's a question of fairness. We need to collect taxes to fund certain services in our society that we expect government to deliver, and seriously, a question here is, can we do that in a fair way today with the system we have set up? Perhaps not.
Yeah, and I think in addition to that,
this is Frank Tamburino.
Yep, from a purely business standpoint, be it a chamber of commerce, an association, there's a number around the state and around the country, that have explored this issue or at least debated the issue internally. And again, as Neil said, it is a matter of fairness from the standpoint of local companies with physical presence in your community that pay local taxes, local property taxes, local sales taxes. They sell their goods and service, and it appears are at a competitive disadvantage with people who are buying or selling online in other areas. Now, obviously, it's, I guess, sort of equally spread around the country, so everybody's in the same boat, which is one reason this whole Marketplace Fairness Act came into play is, again, to level the playing field between brick and mortar and online, and also level the playing field between communities and states throughout the country.
And it's even more complex than that because Costco, which has a physical presence here. When you go online with Costco, you can go online and buy merchandise there. And doing some research, Costco has even decentralized how they do their online business. So what they do is your orders go directly to the factory in which they're produced. So the factory can bypass the brick and mortar. In other words, the factories can deliver the goods directly to you without having to go through a retailer. So it, in a sense, endangers traditional retailers to another degree, because if these online retailers are set up, they can almost be brokers. In other words, they don't have to have a physical building. All they have to have is a computer. And therefore, if it gets larger and larger and larger, and these places are only factory in one place or whatever, theoretically, the drain could be greater in terms of sales tax revenue as the internet expands even further. And so this really becomes a question of, is our current sales tax system obsolete, which I think it is, and in a sense that sales taxes should be on a broad spectrum of services, not just brick and mortar or hard items. And if we did that...
So on services means I get a haircut, I pay a sales tax.
Absolutely. You pay haircut.
You're smiling.
Absolutely. I'm waiting for people to yell and scream. Or if I get a drink at a bar, I'm paying a sales tax on that drink.
Of course, this is Neil, he doesn't really need a haircut in a very
right, my hair is gone.
Very often, anyhow.
Very often. And therefore the idea is, but if we do that, then we could lower sales taxes overall, and therefore the brick-and-mortar stores would not be hurt as much, because you would have a much lower sales tax, and it would induce...
But I'm guessing that my car mechanic doesn't like this idea much.
Your car mechanic, we've done that sometimes in the past. We've put separate sales taxes for repairs as a way to nickel and dime consumers. But a lot of consumers consumers won't like it. Dry cleaners, you pay sales taxes. But if you were trying to stimulate consumption in an economy that is based on consumption, if we were able to lower sales taxes, you might get more consumption. So in a sense, but other people would be paying more.
Now, one of the differences, though, let me point out, this is Frank again, is that, and this has been tried in other states years and years ago of putting a sales tax on services. That brings in new revenue. It's a new tax on services that are not currently taxed. If you look at the tax on internet sales, that is a tax which currently exists and is due to states.
Right.
And then I guess filters down to communities, but at least due to states at this point in time, which is not being collected.
Well, Frank Tamburino, your words "is due" remind me that there's an element of this that many people listening probably do not understand.
Right.
By law, in Virginia, if I buy something online and I don't get charged sales tax, I am responsible to pay that tax to the state of Virginia. And there's a little line on the state income tax form where at the end of the year, if you are paying income tax, I don't know what happens for people who, are buying things and not paying sales tax online, but they don't make enough to file income tax. But anyway, on that form, you're supposed to declare how much you purchased that you didn't pay sales tax on and then make good on it at the end of the year.
Absolutely.
How many, Bob Roberts, how many people do that?
Not very many. Not very many.
And I'm Neil here. I think that raises a practical question. As you would expect me to track my purchases across the course of the year and keep up with what purchases I've made where I did pay sales tax versus those I did not pay sales tax, especially to the degree if they're made online. In some cases, I would be paying sales tax. In other cases, I would not be. And I don't know about you, but I have enough other things to do that would not move to the top of my priority list to be tracking that day in and day out. So I think the reality is most of us at the end of the year don't really have that information and probably aren't terribly interested in spending the effort to put it together.
And
our guest, Neil Menefee, president of the insurance business, the Rockingham Group, as well as a member of the Public Policy Committee for the Harrisonburg-Rockingham Chamber of Commerce. Sitting next to him, Frank Tamburino, president of that chamber. And on the other side of the table, political scientist and public policy specialist from James Madison University, Bob Roberts. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. Mr. Tamburino from the chamber, by the way, is only going to be able to be with us for about another 15 minutes because he has another commitment. And he was kind enough to squeeze part of this show in between commitments today. So if you specifically want to talk with the president of the chamber, then you ought to call right away at 888-WMRA-TALK. Bob Roberts and Neil Menefee will be here throughout the hour, but they'd be happy to talk to you right away, too. In all numbers, we're at 888-967-2825. Or if you prefer to post to us on Facebook, we're listed on Facebook as WMRA's Virginia Insight. Bob Roberts?
Yeah, it's interesting. One of the criticisms of this is that it would be work an undue burden on retailers, particularly small retailers, would have a difficult time if I'm selling maple syrup from Vermont and I'm a mom-and-pop store and I'm on the internet and I get orders from all over the country. I'm going to have a terrible time figuring out, you know, who I'm going to pay. The software is pretty easy on that. In other words, pay the big retailers have it. If the big retailers have the software, the little retailers. I think the real opposition is this. If we get down to the brass tacks here, someone's going to be paying more taxes. That's it. And a lot of conservatives really don't like the idea of forcing someone to pay more taxes, even though they are legally obligated to pay it. So I don't think this has anything to do with technicality or fairness or anything else. This is some very conservatives are opposed to requiring people to pay more taxes. And even though they're escaping taxes, they're obligated to pay.
Well, Frank Tamburino, your Chamber of Commerce actually did a survey on this, didn't you?
Yeah, we took a position, or actually sent a letter to the congressman.
Well,
I guess
before
about 3 years ago, before
you surveyed your members.
Well, we did this past year,
and
so that's why I'm
related
I'll
to what Bob was saying.
Yep.
You found some surprises in what even owners of brick and mortar stores were saying about whether there should be new federal law forcing collection of online taxes.
Yeah, and well, let me not quite backtrack all the way, but I have had conversations ongoing, so I do understand the congressman's position, understand the brick and mortar retailer's position, but as we talked about before the show, you know, it's not a simple yes or no answer. So this is a more complex issue than just do tax sales on internet or not.
But
and
Frank,
you mentioned the survey,
to,
so let me
to
get
Bob's
to the survey
point,
then
yeah.
Of when we put a survey out earlier this year and said. And I don't remember the specific question, but something to the effect of, you know, are you in favor of taxing internet sales or the Marketplace Fairness Act, which enforces the, sales tax collection on internet purchases? They were all across the board. The answers were across the board. And some people said, yes, I'm a small business. It puts me to disadvantage. And other people said, no, either I don't want to pay new taxes, which is not, again, quite accurate.
Right.
Or no, I don't because, again, various reasons, and part of it because it will put me at a competitive disadvantage because I have a brick-and-mortar store but also sell online. So why would I, again, start collecting more taxes from the government, in my store here? You know, I'm competing against others around the country.
I thought what you found in part in that survey, Frank, and maybe I didn't get it accurately, but it was my impression that some of what you were hearing was even from people who own brick-and-mortar stores who are at a disadvantage because in Virginia they have to charge a 5% tax that online retailers sometimes don't, depending on where they're located. That those brick-and-mortar store owners simply said, I don't want to pay more taxes. I don't want anybody else to have to pay more taxes. I'm against this.
Yeah, there were definitely people against it more on a philosophical standpoint of, again, paying taxes, you know, versus the competitive nature of business.
So you listening, you love to pay taxes, right?
Yeah.
And you've got an opinion about this, about whether you should, by federal law, be getting charged tax every time you make a purchase online? The phone number is coming up. We'll be back in about a minute. Bob Roberts is a professor of politics and a professor of public policy at James Madison University. Neil Menefee is chief executive officer and president of the Rockingham Group, an insurance firm with its headquarters in Harrisonburg, Virginia. Frank Tamburino is CEO and president of the Harrisonburg-Rockingham Chamber of Commerce. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. Frank, since you can only be with us for about another 10 minutes, tell us more of your stance on online taxes.
Well, what we have talked about, what I've talked about specifically, over the last couple of years is the fact that, the debate needs to be more drawn out, perhaps, than it has been up in Washington at this point in time. There's a lot of issues surrounding, the Marketplace Fairness Act. There's not been a lot of public debate up in Washington. I mean, there's been debate, should I pay this tax or not, or do people like the Marketplace Fairness Act or not?
So by drawn out, you don't mean that it needs to go on for a long time.
No, but drawn out in a public forum in terms of what some of the real issues are. And we've had this discussion, just a few days ago. Basically a discussion at the local level of should you pay sales tax or not is pretty much a yes or no answer. When you get to the state level, it becomes a little bit more convoluted by different parts of the state and different needs for funding. You get to the national level and you start adding additional elements in, such as states' rights versus federal rights versus interstate commerce. There's a lot of things that we would not normally think about that actually take place in Washington. So, again, it's still a simple question, but it gets very convoluted when you start adding the different elements of tax policy and whatnot into it. So I think some of those, I don't want to say behind the scenes at all, but some of those elements that would not be clear to most of us from the outside really should be put on the table and say, here's some of the points. And I think the congressman did put a paper out.
And when you say the congressman, you're talking about Congressman Bob Goodlatte.
Well, our congressman, because I know we're in his district.
Well, but this radio station covers five congressional districts. Mm-hmm. So Bob Goodlatte is a key player in this issue because he chairs the House Judiciary Committee. And up till this point, he has refused to allow this to be debated in his committee, which is where the first place where it would go.
But
we can talk more about that in a moment. We do have Roy from Harrisonburg on the line here calling us at 888-WMRA-TALK. Roy, thank you so much for doing that. Your question or comment for our guests, please.
Just a question. Does the Virginia State income tax return include a space for indicating whether or not you have paid sales tax on items, or if you haven't, to provide that information and then pay it on the tax return?
It does. Yeah, it's on the tax return. It has a place for that if you haven't paid sales taxes on purchases out of state, let's say in your coming from Harrisonburg with a refrigerator and you're taking it over to West Virginia, it has for West Virginia would have a similar provision too. So it's
right
there.
Well, you're talking about something a little bit different, which is also good to identify. If you buy a car in Maryland and you bring it into Virginia or any other purchase,
so they get
you're
you
supposed to pay sales tax.
But I mean, if I buy something online from L.L. Bean and they don't collect sales tax, I'm supposed to report sales tax and then pay it.
Right.
So Virginia is able to collect the sales tax, right?
But they don't know who. See, those companies are not going to send Virginia the list of people who they've sent items to who haven't paid sales taxes.
So
no,
Roy,
what's
being pointed out here is the taxpayer is supposed to do this by law, but almost nobody does. And in fact, almost nobody knows that they're supposed to. Even when they read that tax form, they don't understand what it means. So they just put down zero for the amount that they owe. But this maybe leads to another question. I don't know if anybody here knows the answer. If somebody files a tax form that's inaccurate because they don't note that they own sales taxes, what's the liability? Is there a jail term? Is there a fine?
It would be. I'm not sure what the penalty is, but they would be in violation of state law and could be fined for it.
And I think getting back to the Congress and the the committees that it has to go through. Again, getting back to our Congressman Bob Goodlatte, I think that's one of his concerns, which is why it hasn't sort of seen the light of day yet. Is that, again, there are all these other issues. There's so many questions out there. It's just not a yes, here's your bill, here's the tax you owe, and you know, here's how it gets transferred directly to the you know, to the state that it belongs.
For the sake of anybody who's just recently joined us, talking about online sales tax issues, it obviously would be beneficial to have Congressman Bob Goodlatte, who's a key player in this issue, with us here today. He has been with us often in the past on a number of controversial issues, but his press secretary told us that he could not fit us into his schedule today. So he was invited. He declined. But we are free to talk about what we've heard about his stance on this issue. I am curious, Roy in Harrisonburg, if we have addressed your question. Roy, are you still with us?
There's ways to collect the sales tax directly from the taxpayer.
How? Because no one's going to know about it. I mean,
the taxpayer is going to file a return,
yeah.
And hopefully they are answering questions accurately.
Oh, we know the amount of tax avoidance in this country is huge. The number of people who falsify their tax returns now is huge. And for the vast majority of Americans don't believe there's anything wrong with this. Because, number one, they don't know. And, number two, they think it's unfair. That's why they go to those online retailers anyhow. It's un-American to force them to basically turn themselves in. I know our tax system is voluntary. But a lot of our tax system is involuntary because on our wage withholding and everything else, there's withholding on that. The government gets your W-2 forms and everything else. We could require the retailers to send to the tax department personal information, but that would be a nightmare. In other words, get all these different retailers sending the tax department in every state who gets what. That would be a nightmare.
Bob Roberts, let me just check with Roy. Roy, yeah. Is it your view that we don't necessarily need a federal law requiring retailers to collect taxes online, because this is something that taxpayers themselves should be doing? They should be following the law in their home states on their own.
Well, I'm not necessarily weighing in on whether we should or we shouldn't have it. It's just there is currently a mechanism for doing it.
Oh, yes, there is. Correct.
Yeah, it isn't like there is no mechanism.
Oh, no.
You have to create something.
No, you're absolutely right.
The mechanism for doing it, the challenge is in the enforcement
right.
In terms of it's purely voluntary, and I think the point's been made that very difficult to track in today's system as to what's been purchased where sales tax was not paid is contrasted.
And most people don't even know they're supposed to.
Is not aware of it.
Right.
Roy, thank you so much for your call. I'm sorry, Frank, you're going to leave soon, so I'll stop interrupting you for at least a couple minutes.
That's okay. I was going to say, actually, but I do want to interject one other thing in a second, but the actual debate really is not so much around whether internet sales are taxed or not, because indeed they are. The debate becomes, you know, what mechanism you use to enforce that,
correct.
Well, to report
collect.
And enforce that.
Collectability.
Let me interject what I was also thinking of a few minutes ago, because, again, Virginia has sort of changed the debate slightly from, you know, is this necessary to this impacts us because our transportation reform of several years ago, a couple of years ago, had a small clause in it that basically said, you know, we anticipate the federal government to do something about online sales tax, therefore we will collect more money, and that's part of reducing or eliminating the sales tax on gas, which it was interesting to say the least. that has not happened at the federal
correct.
Level, and hence there is a timeline now that Virginia looks at saying, okay, if we don't get this passed by the end of the year, wholesale gas tax will increase by an amount equal to, you know, what we needed to cover this at the time of the passage of the legislation, which, again, is another interesting way that it was phrased.
And that gave the
Frank, before you go, I want to clarify. I want to make sure I understand exactly what you're talking about. It's my understanding that the so-called Marketplace Fairness Act, which would institute a federal mandate for all online retailers to collect sales taxes and then distribute them to the states where their purchase where people purchase things, where to send that required sales tax revenue to those states after collecting it from buyers. That Marketplace Fairness Act was approved by the U.S. Senate back in May of 2013 with overwhelming support from Democrats, and I think about half of the Republicans, about 21 Republicans, voted in favor of it. That legislation then went to the House. As a matter of fact, it was introduced. The same legislation was introduced.
There was a
House
bill that was introduced.
And that's where it's been blocked so far. There hasn't even been debate on it. And at the time that the new transportation package was put together by the previous Republican governor in Virginia, Bob McDonnell, what was inserted into that legislation is we anticipate getting so much more money from online sales, and their estimate was close to $200 million a year, I think, that money will then go into transportation when the federal government passes this online tax bill, and we're going to get all this revenue that we should be getting, but so far is not being collected. And the little clause that you're talking about in that Virginia legislation had a rider that said if by some case Congress does not approve this, then we're going to increase gas taxes to cover our loss by 5 cents a gallon?
Right.
Bob Roberts?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, it equates to that, so it wasn't.
Well, it's a percentage.
It's a percentage.
It's a gross. Yep.
And there was a floor. So actually, we're paying. Come January 1st, it's going to be passed on, obviously, to consumers.
Right.
But we will be paying based on what the price of gas was at the point that the General Assembly passed the legislation. Was that a year and a half ago now?
Yeah.
So
it's inevitable that the price of gas, at least in terms of the amount of tax charged on it in Virginia, is going to go up. With gas prices falling the way they have in the past couple of months, is anybody going to notice?
Not as much.
Yeah, this is probably a timely issue from the standpoint of any economic impact or right. political backlash. I will also point out, in all fairness, our legislative delegation, I know this is a broad a reporting area, but our legislative delegation up here did not fall behind the governor's proposal to change the transportation package.
You're talking
everybody,
about the state legislators from
state
the Harrisonburg area.
Our delegations that represent this area, Harrisonburg and Rockingham County, had some concerns over several different pieces of that legislation, and this was one that was pointed out of, you know, it's hard for us in Virginia to actually pass something dependent on somebody else's action. So, again, there's sort of an artificial deadline here that a lot of people are looking at right now saying, you know, we need to pass something and it needs to be passed by the end of the year. Is that going to take place? You know, sort of a long shot at this point.
Well, I think it's an interesting question. One of the questions that's come up, this is Neil, this question as to whether, in fact, gasoline retailers would pass that increase through if, in fact, this does kick back in. In a earlier career, I was actually in the petroleum business. I can assure you the answer to that is yes. retailers operate on very thin margins when it comes to to gasoline. Most folks probably are close to a break even in terms of their gasoline business. They usually use gasoline as a draw in anymore these days to come in to buy other products in their stores. So I think there's a little doubt that that 5 cent increase would be passed along. You're exactly right. In today's environment of falling prices, it might not be noticed to the extent it would have been a few months back. But inherently, that gets back, I think, to the question of fairness that we're talking about. Is it the right thing and the fair thing to do? Particularly to the extent that at some point we'll probably see gasoline prices going back up as the market stabilizes and moves in a different direction. I will come back to the question about from a business standpoint, since I'm a business person, I always worry about more government involvement in our business and particularly complexities associated with collecting taxes and so forth. So I think I have a lot of respect for Congressman Goodlatte. I think he's a very savvy guy when it comes to technology. I believe he does raise a legitimate question that the devil would be in the details here, that if you do this, you need to make sure that it is administered in a in an efficient, straightforward way. I think there are things on the table that could address that. There are certain carve-outs for very small retailers and minimum amounts of business that, in terms of commerce, that is conducted with a given state. So I think there are ways to address many of those concerns that it perhaps would not have to be a burden on small business. But I think some of us are apprehensive in Washington's ability today to deliver things in that fashion. So I think there are legitimate questions there that really do need to be discussed and debated if the e-fairness legislation moves forward to make sure that small business in particular is protected and not burdened with whatever the outcome might be here.
I never really thought it would get through the House, primarily because it's a tax bill. Someone's going to be paying more. Very simple. Someone's going to be paying more taxes, even though they're supposed to be paying it. They're going to be paying it. And the House of Representatives, now under more Republican control than it was before, isn't going to do it because Tea Party and the grassroots simply view this as a tax increase, even though you can talk, you know, for hours and hours, you're supposed to be paying it already. It doesn't matter to the large number of people as a tax increase. And therefore, I believe the whole debate should be shifted away from this bill to a reevaluation of how we apply sales taxes in the state of Virginia.
Oh, let's get to that debate after we get to a couple of phone calls. Political scientist and public policy specialist from James Madison University, Bob Roberts, is the person you were just hearing. Also with us here on Virginia Insight, Neil Menefee, president of the insurance business, the Rockingham Group, as well as a member of the Public Policy Committee for the Harrisonburg-Rockingham Chamber of Commerce, as well as Frank Tamburino, who is president of that chamber. Our phone number, easy to remember, is 888-WMRA-TALK. We're going next to Woodstock. Glenn, thanks for calling in. Your question, your comment for our guests, please.
Hey, I'm glad to be here. Yeah, I think the whole argument and debate is a little disingenuous, especially after so many localities offer sweetheart tax deals to these big box stores that have forced out the local businesses that had been paying taxes. And then on top of it, I can't remember an online purchase that I've made where I didn't wind up paying the local tax through the online retailer.
I agree that okay.
He's leaving. Give him
okay.
a chance. This is Frank.
I understand your comment, and I'll tell you, and again, it goes. If you go back 4 or 5 years, go back in the history of this when you know states first pointed out that they were losing revenue on online sales tax, it was primarily the large online retailers that, in theory, and again, I can't point any fingers, but rumor has it that the online retailers are really stopping any sort of legislation from seeing the light of day. Well, most of those folks now have physical presence in most of the states, or if they don't, you know, still came on board in terms of collecting those taxes because they saw the long-term writing on the wall. So some of the bigger online retailers—
So the big box stores that Glenn's mentioning now are in favor of legislation that would require all online retailers to collect the sales tax.
Or if not in favor, at least not hindering the movement forward.
Right. In a sense, the caller impression is my impression that the vast majority of online stores I go to, I pay sales tax. So you do wonder who these organizations, who these businesses are. And therefore,
Overstock.com.
Overstock.com. But in a sense.
I mean, that's the big one.
That's the big one. But I'm just wondering, are the states overestimating how much money they're losing? And in fact, if this bill passed, they wouldn't get nearly as much revenue as they thought, and therefore they'd be back in the same place they are. In other words, if this is in a sense a Band-Aid for a much more serious problem states have, is that the revenue structures are in serious trouble. It's a much broader debate.
Well,
than
you mentioned a whole different political debate that we should get into, Bob Roberts, and I think it might have been Neil that was mentioning concerns about states' rights and what happens in unintended consequences when the federal government dictates some things that it hasn't been dictating up till now. So we could get to that as well. But we also have to thank Frank Tamburino from the Harrisonburg-Rockingham Chamber of Commerce, who has to rush off to another commitment. Thank you for being with us.
Oh,
we'll be back in a bit more than 1 minute. Online taxes, yes or no? Is basically our focus this hour on Virginia Insight. Still with us from the Rockingham Group, that insurance business's president, Neil Menefee, and from the Politics and Public Administration Departments at James Madison University, political scientist Bob Roberts. Neil, we haven't heard from you in a while.
Well, it's once again, Tom, I think this is a really interesting question. As you think about how much our society has changed, I was looking at a couple data points before I came over today. 1995, there were 16 million users of the Internet. 2014, there are 3 billion plus users, growing fairly dramatically, even in the developing countries. It's a great question. How does our society cope with the change in commerce? The whole idea of doing things electronically, online, mobile technology, it really does shift the way we live and the way we do business. And I don't think we can get away from taxes, but we need to rethink how we collect those taxes. And I think that's the point was Bob was making just before we took the break.
Yeah, I think this is a short, this debate, we're spending all this time over a bill that's going to raise relatively little revenue in terms of the state's entire budget. When we're talking about our budget over $80 billion a year, even if you're lucky, you get maybe $150 million.
Is there a problem with precedent, too? Because if you have the federal government ordering people to collect taxes for states, and then legislation that sort of implies how it has to be processed and how the states interact with these retailers, that's another layer of federal power that we haven't had before, that conservatives especially would want to stay away from.
I think it's unduly bureaucratic. In other words, I think it creates a bureaucratic nightmare that you don't need. Like I said, the states are operating under archaic tax systems, particularly the sales tax, which is archaic. And all the economists will tell you is archaic, that the idea that when you have a large percent of your economy does not involve sales that are taxed, it's fundamentally unfair to exempt a large segment of the economy that people rely upon, just as much as they rely upon people buying groceries at a grocery store.
So you want my hairstylist and my doctor and my car mechanic, I don't have a hairstylist, but if I did, charging sales tax.
Yeah, but the return would be, and people don't believe this would happen. I understand the perception is that if you start down this road, ultimately the sales tax will be as high as it is now on all items. Okay, you have to take care of this by putting something in a constitutional amendment to prohibit that from happening, which you can do. In other words, that if you tax everything, sales, services, whatever, and lower your rate, it doesn't mean you're going to be paying more taxes. But it gives you a much fairer tax system. Right now, in a sense, internet sales, there's an interesting study out last week. The majority of people who buy things off the internet are pretty well off. They're pretty well off. So what you're doing now is poorer people go to brick and mortar stores. So they're paying, the tax burden is heavier on poor people. And since the people who know the internet can find stores which aren't paying sales tax, wealthier people are getting a tax break.
Let's go next to Fishersville. Kevin, thanks for calling in on Virginia Insight. Your question or comment, please.
Yeah, actually, it's kind of a step back. So something you guys talked about just a little bit ago. And as a not only a taxpayer, obviously, but also as a small business man who has to deal with collecting of sales tax. And now we also have an online component to our business where we have to, this is definitely going to have an impact on us in as far as collecting a sales tax and, reporting and paying sales taxes. I guess my biggest question was, and I was listening earlier, and I think it just might be a matter of clarification for me, but example, I purchase X item in another state and pay sales tax on it there. When I then return home to Virginia, I'm expected to, and I may be understanding incorrectly, to pay taxes, sales and use tax on that. The example given earlier was purchase of a car in Maryland, coming back here. If I pay sales tax on it there, would I then also be expected to pay sales tax on it here in Virginia?
It depends on the way we do it in Virginia. You bring the car back, and I think you're credited for, the sales tax you've paid in the other state. I think there's some provision. You have to report it. The technical way you deal with that. In other words, if you paid your sales tax in another state, then you're exempt from. I'm not exactly sure how that works.
Well, and I'm not an expert here, but I think that's really mostly a titling tax gets treated differently. So you can go buy a car in a different state, but when you title it in Virginia, then you're paying the tax as compared to a sales purchase tax.
Right. So then the question becomes not thinking automotive, thinking other large ticket items. Somebody mentioned, say, a refrigerator purchase here or there.
I don't think you pay. I don't think you bring back here. You pay that.
Kevin, okay. Hang on a second, because we got just this question that came in on our Facebook page, where we're listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight, from Elizabeth that relates to what you're talking about. Elizabeth says, years ago, I was working in North Carolina and purchased some furniture. About a month after it was delivered, I got a bill from the state of Virginia for the sales tax, and it was a pretty easy process. So I'm taking that although she was working in North Carolina, she must have lived in Virginia. So you're nodding your head, Barbara.
That's a confusing part of the law. In other words, that I know if you bring things from out of state, in that case, the goods were – a truck probably delivered those items from North Carolina.
Yeah, Elizabeth, I'd be curious how the state of Virginia found out about your purchase.
I mean, too. But in a sense, whether they actually – the North Carolina law may say I don't have to pay sales tax to North Carolina if those goods are being shipped to Virginia. I'm sure that's probably what happened. And therefore, Virginia has a right to collect it since North Carolina did not. And there may be provision under law that permits states won't collect it at the state if they're being shipped to another state. So I'm not sure.
That's where the purchase was viewed as being consummated in Virginia, even though technically, I guess, you may have negotiated the deal in North Carolina. And I think back to the other question is the answer, as far as everything I've seen, is there's no intent for double taxation.
No, there is no double taxation.
You pay the sales tax to one state or the other.
One state or the other.
Not the both. UK, but that's a great question.
Yeah, it is.
Which also gets back to the point is it's not technically viewed as an increase in tax.
Right.
It's just a matter of the tax that is due being collected.
By somebody.
Right.
It's a matter of paperwork across whatever lines
correct.
That are there and just making sure you're doing it. We are, I will mention, I'm probably one of the rare few who actually uses that line on him on his tax return when we have purchased things. Online or when we've been traveling due to the nature of my business, and we have to track all of our expenses and track all those things. And so we actually do keep track of it. And I won't say that it's my fault, but I will say that I have a good accountant and make sure I'm doing what I'm supposed to.
Very good.
But thank you for your time.
Oh,
I really appreciate it.
Kevin, thank you so much for your call. Anybody else listening who might have an opinion or a question about online sales taxes, we still have with us Bob Roberts, political scientist and public policy specialist from James Madison University, as well as Neil Menefee, chief executive officer and president of the Rockingham Group, the insurance business with its headquarters in the Harrisonburg, Virginia area. And we'd love to hear from you at 888-WMRA-TALK. Elizabeth had a second part of her comments us question here on Facebook. She said, in addition, Amazon has been adding sales tax. Please tell me they are sending that money to Virginia and not just keeping it.
Yes, they are.
Yes, I think, in fact, there was fairly significant negotiation with Amazon when they did their first warehouse in Virginia in terms of making sure that reporting and so forth was going to be handled in an effective fashion. So I think there's no doubt that the folks like Amazon and others are remitting that tax to Virginia. I assure you, I deal with Virginia. They're very good about tracking the things to determine that the taxes that are owed to them are, in fact, paid, which, as Virginia residents, we should feel good about.
Right.
I would like to put one question on the table that I think maybe changes the nature of this discussion a little bit. We're very focused on this as a domestic U.S. question. And in my business and in most businesses today, I think people would quickly tell you the days of us looking only at what we can see around us or even within our given state of the United States are over. The Internet has changed that. We're in an international economy these days. So back to Bob's point about the whole concept of taxes, consumption, and so forth needs to be rethought because there's an element. I'm surprised that the number of people I talk to, including my children, who talk about their purchases not being domestic purchases but being international purchases.
Right.
I don't do that rarely, if ever, but there are a lot of people who do. They are quite comfortable in terms of they do some online commerce anyway, and they do it internationally and are very comfortable with that.
Yeah.
We're going next to Harrisonburg. Jamie, thank you for calling us on Virginia Insight. Your question or comment, please.
Yes, I was just wondering, I was listening to the debate, and it seems like we set it up wrong in the first place. Why would they set up the burden of collecting and paying the taxes on the taxpayer when I actually owned a small business for a year, and it wasn't terribly difficult to collect the tax information? So, say someone bought something from me. It was shipped to Silver Springs, Maryland. I was able to, with a simple computer program, collect that tax and distribute it through Silver Springs, Maryland. So why wasn't it set up that way initially, as brick and mortar stores collect the taxes and pay to the local governments or state government?
Well, this is Neil. I'm kind of guessing back to the furniture question. I think I'm old enough to recall when most of these questions came up related to contiguous states, that you were dealing with the state that was right next door. In this area, it would have been with West Virginia, and southern part of Virginia was North Carolina. And I think those things were pretty workable when you were dealing with a contiguous state and you're just talking about back and forth across the border. And what has caught up with us is the fact in today's world, those transactions are occurring not only all across the U.S., but as I mentioned, internationally. And the real issue is how to track them and how to provide that that accountability. And this law we're talking about would be at least a step in that direction. But I think legitimately raises a lot of questions about, as Tom related to before, I commented on unintended consequences, that some of this represents, I think, a good idea in some respects, but it needs to be thought through carefully to make sure that there is not an inappropriate burden placed on small business, well, any size business, or even back to being placed on individuals. So we're going to have a more contemporary answer to this in terms of the world in which we live and operate these days.
Jamie in Harrisonburg, and am I pronouncing your name correctly?
Yes.
Okay. We have something on our Facebook page that just came in from Carol that I wonder if it kind of relates to what you were talking about. She asks, why not pay the sales tax of the state where the business is? After all, if I drove to that state and I bought something, I would pay the sales tax of that state, not Virginia. Bob Roberts, any reaction to what Carol's saying here?
I'm not sure what she's saying. In other words, right now, if you're in a state, you pay the sales tax of that state. And what the issue is, if you're consuming...
Well, I think she's talking about going to a brick-and-mortar store. We were talking about... As the law technically works, if you make a large purchase in Kansas and you bring that large purchase, refrigerator or furniture or something else, into Virginia, you're supposed to pay, since you're a Virginia resident, you're supposed to pay Virginia sales tax, not Kansas sales tax, if Kansas has a sales tax.
It would depend on state law. That would have to be, I think.
But she's asking about the philosophy here. Is if she's traveled to Kansas, then why shouldn't she be paying the Kansas tax, not the Virginia tax, even though she's a Virginia resident?
If I could jump in, I think she makes a valid point. I know we call it a sales tax, but in reality, it's more of a buyer tax. You are paying a tax for buying something. So that would actually put it more of a sales tax, to where the person who sold it, their tax revenue would go to the state in which they sold their item. So I think she does make kind of a solid point there.
Well, and I think that is in part of the debate related to the very legislation we're talking about, is should this be a point of origin tax as compared to a sales or consumption tax? And that's a legitimate question. Well, I would point out, Bob knows this better than I do, but I think there are five states that do not have a sales tax.
Right.
And then you get to some unintended consequences. So if I want to go set up a retail operation and we do it as a point of origin tax, I probably have a lot of motivation to go set that up in a state that has no sales tax, because then that would allow me to potentially develop a large volume of business that could be priced below the other states, which I think brings you back to this fundamental question of what is a proper taxing approach and philosophy in today's world, where e-commerce is becoming a greater and greater part, even for the bricks and mortar folks.
We're almost out of time, and before Jamie goes away, you've been so helpful. I just want to ask Jamie, if it's not too personal a question, do you ever get haircuts?
I'm sorry. What was the question?
Do you ever
haircuts?
Yeah.
Yes.
How would you feel about your barber charging you a sales tax on your haircut?
I heard you guys mention that earlier, and I can't remember which gentleman was saying it.
Bob Roberts. Yeah.
I was saying. Please.
People do not want more taxes or taxes services and stuff like that.
I know.
I don't think I understand his philosophy.
Even if they lower the overall.
I understand the philosophy if it's lowered overall.
Yeah.
But then, yeah. I don't know. I don't think people would go.
I don't think people would like it either.
That was Bob Roberts that was suggesting taxes on services, not Neil or Tom.
Jamie, thanks so much for your call. Bob Roberts, we've got 15 seconds left for you to persuade the world that they should accept sales taxes on services.
I think it would make business boom. In other words, you'd have much lower sales taxes across the country. Your service taxes would not be that extreme because your tax burden would be spread, and you wouldn't have all these problems. You wouldn't have all these
time. Our guests have been Bob Roberts, political scientist from James Madison University, Neil Menefee, CEO and president of the insurance business, the Rockingham Group, plus earlier in the hour, the CEO and president of the Harrisonburg-Rockingham Chamber of Commerce, Frank Tamburino. Gentlemen, thank you all so very much
thank
for
you.
Making time for us.
It's been fun. Thanks.
Virginia Insight's executive producer, Matt Binke. Dan Easley, our technical director. Bob Levicky, associate producer. Some of our break music supplied by Robert Jospe and Inner Rhythm. Podcasts of this program are available on the Virginia Insight tab at WMRA.org. When you get to the page for today's broadcast, you will see links to more information about our guests. Plus, if you go to Virginia Insight's Facebook page and click like, you'll have access to a whole bunch more information about these broadcasts there as well. Thanks so much for tuning in for this edition. I'm Tom Graham. I hope we can get together again soon for more insight.